you're in the right place if you're looking to know a bit more about Node. So before this week, who had heard of Node.js? Good, fair number. Of those of you who have heard it, how many have actually attempted to use it in some capacity? And how are your results? Good, bad, good, good, kind of mixed, or just never found the right use for it?
We use it to do automated mobile testing.
Okay. All right. So the rest of you may not have raised your hand, so you just heard about Node.js this week, right? Or you're at least asking the question of what can I do with it? Is that about right? All right, so I'm going to give you at least one idea. And if you were at Exchange, this is a repeat. It was called the Zero Footprint Data Monitor only because at the time, I just wasn't sure if Node.js would be accepted as a third-party integration talk. And so I kind of made it a little bit more of a DBA type talk. But now, no subterfuge, it's Node.js, but that's okay. Spruce this up a little bit in light of recent news. So, all right, so what we need to do first is understand the concepts of push technologies and what exactly does that mean. Quick primer on integrating ABL with Node.js and Sock.io. So that's the end goal, is we're going to figure out how to actually get those technologies talking to each other. The nice thing is, I do have some sample code that you'll be able to download, and in case you do miss the URL or the QR code or any of that that's shown here, these will be in PDF form and handed over to Tom by the end of the conference, so one way or another you'll get the URL. The code's still out there, still works, so you can download it and try it on your own. The main reason why is that I had to fight a little bit internally to convince my managers that no, it's okay to give this code away because I cobbled pretty much everything together from Progress KB articles and Google. So if I could cobble it together on my own, everyone else should at least get that courtesy of having all the pieces pulled together for you. All right, so if you, right now, the problem with getting instant data back in a web page is you have to request it. That is what the internet calls pull. You make the request, data gets sent back. Very simple. Polling mechanisms. The one way that we've kind of sidestepped this is what they call long polling, AJAX long polling. It has various other names. I think I've heard Comet is one sort of methodology. Those basically, or hidden iframes, basically they're all ways of doing a AJAX request that basically stays open for an extended period of time, waiting for any responses to come back from the server. I'm going to explain in a minute why that really doesn't work that great, and why, of course, it's not that real time. The only way to truly push, get it from the server, is if the server initiates or says, I have data here to go, and you get it. In order for that to work, you do need two-way communication. As the browser, don't have to request that data, but the browser still needs to communicate to something on the back end and say, hey, let's open a dialogue. And that's essentially what this is. This is like a side channel of communication. So let's say you have an existing web speed application and it's still loading embedded speed script, you're making your HTTP request, that page is coming back. Well, what Node.js and Socket.io allow you to do is sort of create a sideband, if you will, that says, hey, let's have a side conversation over here, and this dialogue goes both ways. Can be addressed using WebSockets. Sorry, I forgot to click. Alright, RFC 6455. The reason why this is important that I mentioned is that it took forever, it seems, for this standard to actually be ratified. This is for the WebSocket protocol. There was various intermediate protocol versions, and of course, none of them really interoperated. You had Chrome that supported maybe the first few versions, and Firefox said, well, we'll support up to the newest one, and so nobody really understood or was on the same page. As soon as the RFC was published, everybody got on the same page. That's why it supports your two-way communications. Here's where
most people, and even myself at first, didn't quite understand what happens. It actually starts as an HTTP request. You communicate with, in this case, the node server, and you do a GET request, and essentially as part of that GET request, there's a little handshake that goes on. And one of the things that happens is, in that request, the browser says, oh, by the way, I'd like to upgrade this connection to WebSocket. The backend server says, okay. And all of a sudden, the handshake is done, and you'll see this special communication line. It's not quite a standard GET request. It's not an AJAX request. You actually see it. It's a WebSocket request. And so there you go. You can actually see it. Firebug, for example, you'll actually see that upgrade process take place. So the handshake initiates connection. Client remains connected to the server. Here's the nice thing. By Node.js and Socket.io, one of the things that Socket.io that's nice about that is it has a bunch of fallbacks in it. So in case your browser doesn't support WebSockets, it'll try to use some of those older methods. Like it'll degrade gracefully. It'll try. All right, can you do long polling? No. Can you do hidden iframe? Yes. And so it'll try to do some of the older ways. But if you support WebSocket and for whatever reason you get disconnected, it'll automatically try to reconnect. It'll send somewhat of a heartbeat to actually keep that connection alive. So there's all kinds of nice things that happen inside of it. It's FM, flipping magic. All right, so why would we do AJAX versus WebSockets? So shown here, let me get my other laser pointer. All right, so here's polling. So it's a back and forth request, response, request, response, request, response. Whether that polling happens, you know, every 30 seconds, 10 seconds, whatever, that's right now the only other way besides the long polling that keeps the door open. The other mechanism is, okay, well, I'll just check from my web page. I'll go back to the server and check occasionally. Do you have data? Do you have data? Do you have data? Do you have data? That's a lot of overhead. There's headers involved. Headers add up over time. So by the end of the day, I think we had crunched numbers, and several other people have crunched numbers. Even with, you know, like less than a kilobyte worth of headers, if you're polling every 10 seconds to the server, and you've got, you know, a couple million connections in a day, that adds up to a lot of network overhead. That's useless. That's a drain on your network resources. That's a drain on your server to handle all those unnecessary requests, all those unnecessary DB queries to see, is there data waiting for me? WebSockets, on the other hand, this happens once, and this is very small text, so I'll explain it. So there's the WebSocket upgrade, and basically that's it. Notice this arrow goes from the browser to the server once. Everything after that is a connection back from the server saying, hey, I've got data available. And it's completely, asynchronous, but it's not like set intervals, it's as the data is available. Yes?
So can these sockets require a lot of overhead?
Not really, and actually, I'm gonna get into how it maintains the sockets. I would say no, that the reason why this is very popular is that it has a very low overhead to maintain those sockets. In fact, I think like the handshake, it's around like 2 kilobytes or something like that, or maybe less. It's very, very small. And once that handshake packet goes back and forth, that connection is there. It's a much lower latency. Again, because once that handshake happens, there is no additional headers needed. You don't have to, the connections don't have to re-identify themselves as, you know, what kind of operation is this, et cetera. You're done. But of course, it means nothing if your browser doesn't support WebSockets. There are still earlier versions of IE, I think even, someone please correct me if I'm wrong, but I want to say even IE8 does not support it, IE9 may support WebSockets, 10 I think definitely does. Much earlier versions of Chrome and Firefox don't, but I think right after that RFC standard was published, which was around December of last year, They fully supported the standard. So even on your phones, if you've got a modern operating system with the built-in browser, it should support WebSockets. All right, so what's your parts list? Progress, I'm recommending 11 because of the JSON parsing in there. I'm going to do all of my examples using assembly of a JSON data packet with Progress. Node.js, obviously, Socket.io, which is a plugin for Node. jQuery, for my example, you can use whatever the heck you want. You can use plain JavaScript if you want. And a server. You can do this. Most hosting providers, like if you do like share hosting plans, like for your website, they aren't going to let you run processes. So you need some sort of either private share, private hosting, like your own AWS instance, Amazon instance, or something like Modulus. That's where they sort of step in and fill that gap of they specialize in, no, you want to run Node here, upload your files, we'll immediately start up an instance for you. Because that process, it is a process that needs to run. So you need a separate server or a server that's capable of running these processes. Compatible browser, compatible device. All right, the best way to explain all of this is by actually looking at a real example. I want something that actually works. So I'm going to come up with a fake problem. We're going to come up with a working solution. Of course, demos, we're going to go through the code. I'll mention some things that could be enhanced. And hopefully we'll have one extra demo at the end that I've packed on, should we have time. All right, going about 12 minutes. Okay. So, what's the problem? Client wants immediate notification when something happens. Great. Needs access via web application. So we want this to be open and accessible. We don't want them to have to download an app or anything. We want to keep this simple. Just hit a web page and there's your info. Minimal system resources. Of course, we don't want to be tying up our system with a bunch of useless requests. So immediately say, can we try not to do polling? Sure. We want to target specific users. The only reason why I mention this is the data that we want to send across. It has to be meaningful to the person watching it, but at the same time, we don't want the information just flat out on the web available for anyone to look at. We want only specific people to look at specific data. That's just my little contribution to this. All right, so below profile, continuously, no spin up, handle multiple connections, data update automatically in real time. Well, that sounds familiar. Low overhead, new two-way communication. Node and socket seems to fit the bill for this. So we're going to set up something in ADL that will actually talk to Node, so deliver the data to Node, which will then disseminate the data back out. Our solution, anywhere you can install OpenEdge, because we are going to run a little process. I have working examples, I think, in the code that you'll be able to download that will work on Windows or Linux. Utilize a separate central process for all client connections. So, that's basically saying we're essentially adding a third party to this. It's not going to be you're going to connect directly to Progress. You're going to connect to essentially a third party process. No, it's going to give you the data, not Progress per se. Accessible by any web browser, and we're going to use WebSockets. All right, so I'm going to kind of skip through these because at this point I think Karen did a good job of trying to explain out, you know, why would you want to go to Node? Plus, there's so many resources and so much evangelism on the internet already about why you want to go to Node. Though I will point out, third point, this one can provide multiple services over the same port. The first thing that tripped me up was thinking that Node needed help. Node doesn't need help. I thought I needed to set up like a an Apache server and have like a special URL set aside for those WebSocket connections. Nope. Node has a built-in set of libraries. One of them is an HTTP library. When you include that, you can essentially spin up a HTTP daemon so it can respond to web requests. And remember I said that the WebSocket, it's an upgrade to a GET request. So what happens is Socket sort of sits on top of that built-in HTTP service. and handles the WebSocket request. So as soon as you get that request, it says, I want to upgrade. It says, okay, you're going to go over here. I'm going to hand off to my buddy WebSockets, or Socket IO. As package manager, so you'll hear the NPM, Node Package Manager. It's, if you're familiar with Linux, it's like apt-get or RPM. There's that repository of modules that you can look at and very simply say, NPM install module main, and you're done. For improving applications. Okay, what is going to happen is we're going to be very event-driven. That's the way most of this stuff, at least for sockets, works. On connect, on some event, do something, emit some event. I already said that as well, that it has fallbacks. All right, so I'll always tell you now, I'll pop this URL back up in a little bit. I'm going to show you my working demo, but if you want, you know, the hotel wireless will probably stress it today, but if you want to go to that URL, again, I'll put that up later. But you'll actually be able to see this in real time. But let me actually show you what this is doing. Okay, so I created this web interface to a .p that we already had that basically we could run on a Linux console and it would tell us what's going on in the database because we had an application running that occasionally would get like huge spikes in some of the tables. And it's like, why are you reading that many records? There's not that many records in the table to begin with. It was like an AP accounting table. Come to find out, that pointed us to a bad index that we were using. It was either a bad index or a bad query. All right, so log back into my little application here. And so how I'm getting to this, I've got a... I set this up in like 15 minutes. I already had the code. I just needed to upload it. Created my account, set up a project, uploaded my files. It deployed and started up my Node instance, gave me a URL, and boom, hit that URL. And this is actually running off of Node. It's serving up the files, and it's already got the WebSocket connected. So everything that I do here, so as I start doing things in the database, if I say, give me a full query on the customer table, hopefully within, there we go. So I've got on my web speed side, or on my ADL side, I've got a little .p that's running every few seconds, and it's just basically gathering stats from the metadata on the database. And so you can see, I color-coded it so you can see which items changed at last update. So you can see it's continually pushing data to me. I don't have to refresh at all. If I wanted to, I could have multiple people connect. I'm going to subscribe to basically a made-up UUID here. It's just something that says, this is the server I want to talk to, and I'm going to get into what that means in a second. But basically, that's all there is to it. So everyone... Nice big query on the order table, and we should see something in a second. The order table should pop up, maybe the sales rep table. Yeah, there we go. So order and customer. So basically there was a huge read on that table and obviously some extraneous reads on the customer. So everybody see what we're doing so far? All right. So what are we actually doing? On the ADL side, the .p I was talking about, I'm calling it harvester because that's what it's doing. It's harvesting the data. I make up a UUID. So for my server, I have a unique identifier string that says that's the instance that I'm interested in. That harvester is looking at a database and it's going to generate data. It's going to post it, just doing an HTTP post to the Node.js server. Now what it's doing with that UUID, it's using that as an identifier for the room I want to broadcast to. And that room is essentially the broadcaster, that's socket IO saying, all right, all the sockets connected to me, I'm going to send you some information, and so it disseminates that to its clients. Slightly different view of it, and I know there's a lot of lines going around here. This is illustrating why we kind of came up with this. let's say, actually right now, you guys can't connect to my machine because there's actually something in the hotel Wi-Fi that says you can't connect machine to machine, or at least so far as I can tell. So essentially I'm firewalled. But you can still get this data because I'm sending it out to a third party. You can connect to that third party, that's public, it's on the internet. And so essentially we're bypassing the firewall. You're not connecting into me. I'm not actually connecting to you. I'm connecting to the third party. You're connecting to the third party. Information's going through. And I'm just gonna, this is just illustrating that, you know, if you had different UUIDs, you could be monitoring different services, and so you could have multiple browser windows open. This one's looking at this client, this is looking at that client. All right. That makes sense, the whole solution, or the demo, the method. All right, so I actually flipped this around. I started last time going through the progress stuff, but I'm guessing you probably want to see how does Node do this, right? Come on, you've all had coffee, right? Okay. All right, so we'll go right into the Node stuff. Now, I've extracted snippets of code that are pertinent. I just didn't want to have to deal with zooming my screen and not having the text quite right, so I've kind of distilled down as much as I can to make it fit here what actually is going on. So the first thing is you need to establish what port you want to run on. In the case of like Modulus, they actually have a default port for running everything, it's 8080, but they have some redirection going on so that you can hit essentially a common DNS name on port 80. And it sort of redirects you automatically. In my case, or if you were to spin this up yourself when you download the code, it's going to listen on some port. Everyone likes 1337. Anyone here needs to be? Every example that I see uses the same port, so I'm like, eh, I can't flip it, I'll use it. All right, so we need a port. And I just put it in a variable to make it easy to replace later. It turned out that was very helpful for moving this stuff up to Modulus. HTTP, so yes, this is all JavaScript because Node is JavaScript. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to require the HTTP service. I'm also going to require some things that I'm going to need later, URL parser, file system access. These are all built in, so these are like your bare minimum that actually come out of the box with Node. And this whole thing, there's so many different ways you can build an application in Node. I could have used the Express framework, but I didn't want to muddy the waters too much with yet another framework, so this is all like plain Node code. There's nothing really special. So the first thing you need to do is you need to create a server, and it's very handy just to have it at a reference to that server in case you need it later. So HTTP server, we're going to do our HTTP create server. You need a callback. Everything in Node pretty much works with a callback. There was a joke. I submitted an application for a Node.js job, but I didn't get a callback. On HTTP request, this is our callback method. So somewhere, next slide, I'm going to show you what that method is. So that's your callback. You're going to listen on a port. That's all there is to it. And we're also going to go ahead and set up our socket.io. Now this one here is from the npm install socket.io. So this is the same way I require here. Once you install modules, you require them the same way. So I'm going to require socket.io, and I'm going to listen on the HTTP server. You see how that links up? So io.sockets on connection. So on connection of a socket, we're going to have a callback. So what are these callbacks? Here's our on HTTP request. In JavaScript, for those not familiar, you could do an inline function. So instead of having that little one name on HTTP request, I could have put this in as function request comma response and then put my open curly brace and basically define the function right there. For legibility, I just sort of broke that out. So. I created my request, and this is going to handle request and response. Request comes in, there's properties on that request. The nice thing here is, if you're not sure what is contained, you could do a console.log just like you can in a web application with JavaScript and any modern browser that understands a console message. You can do console log request, and it'll basically dump in your debug console all the properties and info about that object. So it's very easy to develop and debug inside of Node. So anyways, I'm going to parse the URL. Basically, I'm going to split my URL. I'm going to try and gather some information about what was the user requesting. Based on request method, this is the verb, so that whether they were doing a get or a post. If they're doing a get, I'm going to run another callback, do get or do post. Both kind of take the same parameters. That's just the way I structured it. Default is, if you did like a put or delete, basically a method that is not supported, I'm actually outputting, you know, the HTTP 405 method not allowed, and I'm ending. Basically, I'm going to flush back out to the user as a response. You can't do that. All right, so what do we do on a get? Get, basically, if you just go to the URL without specifying anything else, by default, it's going to return to you the client page. So this is, it's just going to serve up, just like an Apache service would, like serving your default index.html by default. It's just going to say, I'm just going to give you the client page. Otherwise, that's really the only one we're going to support. Otherwise, we're just going to say, whatever you're looking for, I can't find it. And then this is the power of Node. You can get really low level. And in fact, this is a very dumb example of, okay, whatever file name I figured out up here, if I'm still here, because I didn't end because of my default. Okay, so if I have a file name, I'm actually going to look in my current directory for that file. I'm going to serve it up as UTF-8. If there's any errors or whatever happens when I get the content, I'm basically going to flush that content back out. So essentially, this is like writing low-level Apache web file handling stuff. So you can go way down in the weeds with Node.js. Very, very low. Like, I'm not even handling whether... I'm just saying, it's going to come out as text HTML. There's more advanced ways of saying, well, based on what you requested, I can return the correct MIME type. And no, I'm keeping this simple. By the way, everyone okay so far? So we just did a get. So post. This is the part that's of interest, because this post, the only time we should be doing a post is when our ABL harvester is going to push data through. So again, I got my request, my response, path value. In this case, I split it out so that the URL is your server name / UUID. And when you post to that UUID, it basically says, okay, that part of the URL, I'm going to use as the identifier. And so this is where you get into the event-driven stuff. So when I get a request on data of request, I'm going to keep churning through until I hit the end of that incoming data. And then I'm going to do something with it. So again, this is low level. It's happening very asynchronously within Node. You don't just get the body. You actually have to keep waiting for that response to come in. When it gets the end, okay, now I'm done. If I get some sort of error, basically, if it looks like someone's trying to DDoS me, I'm gonna just abort the whole thing. But I'm basically going to gather up all the post data into... Yes, Frank?
Where do you set how many 6?
What's that?
Where do you set how many 6? That's the length.
No, it's 1E6. It's one... It's exponential. It's basically saying, if I get an obscenely large data packet coming in, someone's obviously trying. I cobbled this together off of the internet, and someone said, you might want to put in a safety check to see if someone's trying to like overflow your server. So that's where I got that. So that's a safeguard, I figure. Let me do the courtesy and pass that along as well. All right, so once we have the data.
So how do you know that you reach the end of your download?
How do we know? Because this on data, so as Node is getting data, this is what's churning.
But how do you know you got the last?
Next slide. On end. So when we hit the end of the request, so in HTTP, everything has essentially an end of file. There's some byte somewhere that says this is the end. When Node sees that has been hit, it says, all right, I somehow have my post data. I'm going to start looking at that. So if my post data is non-null, I'm going to try to take that. Now, if the post data is sent as string, that needs to be turned back into a JavaScript object. So we're going to use JSON parse. This is the same JSON parse that's in your web browser. We're going to turn it into an object. That object now lets us look at things. One thing we're going to pull out of that is the actual data packet. But first, we need to see, is there anybody listening? So based on the UUID we got, harvesters. I've got a little array sitting out there that says, here's the harvesters that are actually sending data. So we're going to look to see if there's UUID for the socket broadcast. This makes sure that that list of harvesters, that the UUID exists, so node is aware of this service is available. This UUID, there should be someone attached to it. Let's go push that onto the stack. If the JSON object exists and socket.io clients UUID. So basically, if I have clients that are responding to that UUID, then we're going to find out who's in that room. So remember I said that UUID identifies a room, and we'll get to in a minute how the clients identify themselves as listening. I'm going to see where's that room, and I'm going to emit a broadcast data. This is of my own naming convention. This is not something Node told me to do. That's my name for it. I'm going to emit some event back out to the clients to say, hey, I got data. And I'm going to send my JSON object, specifically activity data. That's going to be like a little array or I think it's a temp table that I may have in there. Or no, data set. That's actually a data set of data.
Hit the wrong button.
Alright, command. This is just checking to see if just by chance while the person was on the web page, if they clicked like one of my little buttons and said to send a command back to the server. Because this is two-way. I mean we're doing an actual post from progress. So as part of a request, what do you get? So I can send data back if I want, and that's what that little thing's going to do is just going to see if there's any pending requests or pending commands to send back. Same thing here. I'm going to figure out if there's any response that I need to send. And this response body, it's an object, so I need to stringify it back for the server. And I'm basically going to string this back and write my response back. So this finishes out that whole request. So that's it for the post side. Now for the socket. So this is the callback. So every time that there's a web socket upgrade, that's immediately going to add that socket into the list. So on listen, so again, this is of my choosing for that name. So over on the client code, I'm going to emit a listen, or I'm going to do some event that says, hey, I'm going to start listening for this UUID. And then the callback to say, yes, you are listening or not. Just a very simple check. If the UUID is 40 characters, it's legit. I'm going to let it go through. My socket object is just that. It's an object in memory on the Node server. I can just tack on any properties I want. It's a JSON. Object. I'm then also going to say socket.join. This is a method that's already there. This is what lets you join the room. So I say I want to belong to room A or room B. That's going to basically say this socket also answers in this room. And I'll send back the callback that says, yeah, you're good. You're joined. There's other on commands, so on send command, I'm going to skip this. This is basically sending that as part of that post response. This is a specific event that I could listen for coming from the client saying, hey, next time you get a request from that harvester, send this command back. All right. So how do you actually start? What I didn't cover yet is what do you name your file? So when you create your Node code, basically you create just a JS file. You can call it pretty much whatever you want. I've seen some people use index.js, I've seen server.js, app.js, whatever you want to call it. Maybe make it something more meaningful. I've actually started using server.js to make it more explicit. You just run node, space, name of your JS file, boom, you're done. Process starts, node is running. So, what happens on the clients? All right, let's skip through a lot of this. So this is an HTML document. There's our open body. We have a form. I'm just gonna keep between the body tags for right now. I've got a little form. I should have included a picture just for reference. But at the top of the screen, there's a form that says, what UUID do you want? You put it in, you hit submit. There's all my buttons and everything in there. Basically, I have areas reserved on the screen for showing data. This is just divs. Divs with IDs, so that later I can refer to them in jQuery and say, give me that div, and then put content in it. That's all this is setting up. I've got some style sheets to make things a little prettier. I've got some actual JavaScript code. Now, I'm using a CDN for all of these, Content Delivery Network. I'm not actually hosting them, because that's why you saw my get code was so simple. I'm only going to serve up the HTML document. Everything else, I'm going to pull from somewhere else on the internet, because I don't want to bother setting all that up in Node. So include jQuery UI, jQuery itself. This one, though, this one is relative or absolute. This is actually coming from the same server. This is all set up transparently for you. When you do that npm install socket.io, it gives you the ability, when you serve up from Node, that you can relatively or absolutely request the socket.io.js file. That's all you need to require. You've now got socket.io. The only thing you need to do is actually hook it up. So for those familiar with jQuery, basically this is the same as like a onload event in your body. So document ready, put focus in the little UUID field at the top. I'm gonna create my socket. So for the same URL, so how you got to this page is also how you're gonna get to the socket, do an IO connect. So my little IO object, that's actually a name that's already sitting out there that came in with the socket.io.js. That's it. That's what does your get request, upgrades you to the WebSocket, and you're done. Your socket is now here. I got some stuff to set up, some UI. I'm going to get into these callbacks in a minute. Do subscribe. So when you press that submit button, we're going to subscribe. What are we doing with subscribe? Grab that UID value. And here's that listen. Remember we saw on listen? Well, here's our init listen. We're going to say, here's the UID. Basically, nothing really happens. We send a UID, and remember we had a callback that just came and said, callback true, false. That's all we're doing. We're looking for, was that connection successful? If it was, we're going to hide our subscription form because we don't need it anymore, and we're going to start showing the console, and we're going to wait for data to come in. That's essentially all this is doing. Now, one thing we will do additionally is socket on broadcast data. Actually, remember on the post side, we had a emit broadcast data. So the server side is going to emit data. Someone's got to listen. So here we say, by the way, I'd like to listen for this event. And that's it. So that's actually pretty much done. Here's your emit on this side for the send command. So if I want to send a command back, I emit as the client, the server will pick it up, and then move on and make sure I've got all of my items covered. All right, update console. This one's real, I want to say it's real easy, but basically all that's happening is update console is a callback right here. I'm sorry, I glossed over this. So on the broadcast of data, so when the client hears that data has been broadcast to it, it needs to know what to do with that data. So update console is a callback that I created that's going to get the data. So this is going to be that activity data that came from the post event. Just basically a check to see, all right, if the data came in as string, which really shouldn't at this point, just in case we're going to try and parse it into a JavaScript object. Otherwise, if it is an object, we're good. Populate monitor data. And monitored data consists of three tables. Table activity, index activity, and user activity. The only thing we end up doing with the rest of this code is stepping through an array. So for each element of the array, that's a record, take the record and output it to the screen. And there's a huge block of code that I'm not showing. It's my little yada, yada, yada down here. Block of code that's just saying, dynamically create a table row, create table cells for each data element, and append that, and do that for each row, and then append the data table into this into the screen in the right place. That's all it's doing. It's DOM manipulation. Again, it'll all be in the code, but that's pretty much vanilla JavaScript. It's more important that I show you, you know, the emit and on, all the data subscription type stuff. All right, so I should have. This is my duplicate loading slide. This was originally the first one, so now we'll get into the ABL side. Yes?
There's one problem I have with
you might have to speak up a bit. I really can't hear.
There's one problem I have with Socket.io, and that is when you refresh the page, the sockets hang around. So, and I couldn't get the right amount to track when you refresh the page. So to restore your socket.
I'm gonna cut you off there just because I want to make sure I got enough time to cover all this code. That is a whole other conversation about reestablishing sockets, redundancy, scalability, all that that we haven't even gotten into, and that's a whole other topic. Yes?
Good question. So what happens if you know the process goes down?
Again, that's a whole other set of problems that I'm not even dealing with right now. I'm trying to keep this just to get this up and running, illustrate how the event handling occurs. But yeah, there's so much more to discuss about that that maybe a topic for exchange. All right, so monitor.p, what are we doing? Like I said, it's just a .p, so I've got a bash script. I have a shell script. It's easier for me to just show the shell script. Very simple, running progress in batch mode. I'm going to run a procedure. I have a startup PF to make things nice and easy. So there's my database that I'm going to connect to. It's basically a Sports 2000 database. And I'm going to dump anything to a monitor.log file. Everyone good with scripts? All right, so what's in monitor.p? Well, I'm just using some preprocessors to make my life easier. I'm going to state what the server IP is that I'm going to connect to. Your code you'll download will run locally on your machine, so I'm just going to use the loopback address. There's our 1337 port. There's a hard-coded UUID just to give you something. Process wait, how long between polling events are we going to wait? So you can adjust that as needed. I'm just going to wait 10 seconds to read the metadata. And just in case we end up with way too much data in the data packet, we want to keep this quick. Let's limit ourselves to the last 30 events for table data, index data, and user data. All right, using all OOABL, so I'm going to use my, just so I don't have to prefix all of my classes with my package name. So com breakpoint star. Somewhere out there I've got a sysload class. In there, I'm going to create a new sysload and pass to it my server port, the UUID, how long I want to wait, maximum rows. That just creates my object. I'm going to output something to the log file just so I can see what's going on. And I'm going to run start monitor. So that's basically going to clean the slate and start monitoring. And then it's going to report numbers from that point rolling forward. So what does start monitor do? For brevity, just showing what it's actually doing, it's just a repeat log. We're going to wait for however long. We're going to build our sample, our data sampling. If we have a data set, we're going to write data. So basically what I'm doing is I've omitted here the creation of my JSON object and all that. That's already all out there in the progress documentation. Went to the session yesterday on JSON versus XML, I think, is a good example of all that, outside of your variables. So really all I'm doing is I'm creating my, I'm kind of force creating an activity data property, and I'm going to append into it all the table data. And then I'm going to do this little guy here, OWebSocket. OWebSocket is a class that I created. It's not technically a WebSocket that we've been talking about. It's just progress using the web and doing a socket connection. One day, I hope that maybe it could be retrofitted or adjusted to actually have WebSockets from progress, but I think there's other options for getting data in and out of node. But for now, I'm just going to use progress sockets. I'm going to connect to that server on that board for that UID. So you can see there's that URL that I was constructing. I'm going to send my request data, which at this point is a long character. And output should be status, so HTTP 200, 404, 500, whatever. I'll attempt to extract a line type from the headers and the actual response, if any, that came back. Actually, that's kind of it. I hate to say that on the progress side it's a black box, but you'll be able to look at the code. Like I said, that part was cobbled together from progress knowledge base articles, how to do a socket connection. The only thing special that I did was I tried to actually make it a class. And if you know, sockets don't really work from classes because you have procedure callbacks. Thanks to a little hack that Julian posted on the peg a couple years ago, I graciously borrowed and credited his code for giving myself a little static callback so I could actually get away with using sockets in a class. All right, so what actually happens on a harvester? So on the ABL side, we're going to start monitoring. On the broadcaster side, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to create our HTTP server, and then we're going to attach socket I/O to that same server. On the client side, we're going to connect to our socket I/O server. Everybody got that? Next step. Nothing really happening on the harvester side. He's timed out. He's waiting. On the broadcaster, so on the Node.js side, we're going to start listening for connections. On the client side, we're going to start connecting. Next. Okay, WebSocket on the harvester says, hey, I got data. I'm ready to send it, so it does its post to Node. Node says, okay, I got the post event. I need to see who's listening for that UUID. Okay, I've got all the people in the room together. I'm going to tell them, hey, there's data available. On the client side, their ears are going to perk up and say, oh, I got a broadcast data event. I need to do something with that data. It's going to draw it to the screen. Meanwhile, Node has finished sending back the response to that post event. Socket on, so send command. If there was any additional commands that needed to be sent, now Node is broadcasting, listening for what would have been an emit from the client side. So that's the last step. So that's basically the life cycle of what's going on each time this thing starts up, runs. All right. Did anyone actually try that demo? Yes?
No, I
didn't try it.
Oh.
Yeah.
How do you control how many people you got in the room?
How many people are connected? I'm not really controlling that.
No,
I've got nothing right now. The only thing I'm doing, and I can switch real quick to... there's my modulus instance. It's telling me, you know, application stats. So I guess that's with the response time peaking around 300 milliseconds. CPU usage is there. It's like nil. This is when I started up the instance this morning at like 7 in the morning. You see, CPU has been almost nothing. Memory, though, seems to have spiked. I'm not sure. That's probably maybe some bad coding on my part. I may have to revisit now that I'm actually seeing these metrics. It's only using 41 megabytes, though. I mean, it maybe went up from about 35 to just maybe 40 megabytes. But, I mean, it's been pushing data since before everyone came in the room here.
But I mean, I don't have any caps right now on how many users can connect. I don't know that I really need to for this particular demo. But I mean, in their environment, you can actually change your scale. So if you wanted to add more servers, that's what they're talking about. You can horizontally scale up. I think this is the list. Right, so maybe let me get through, just make sure I've got just my conclusion slide. So basically we're just gonna, the way that I'm doing the joining of ABL to Node is I'm just doing an HTTP post. If you went to Julian's talk, I think on Monday, when he talked about what he had done with Node.js, he just used ls command and did a wget, or no, he did a curl command. I've actually, for another project, I needed a HTTPS connection, so I used wget. You could do the same thing. Mine may be overkill, actually, by using progress sockets. It may have been easier for me to just craft my data packet and essentially pass it to curl or wget on the operating system and let it handle pushing that data. I didn't necessarily have to use a progress socket, but I wanted to keep it all in ABL, so, and it worked.
What role does the Modulus play
here? Modulus right now is hosting the application for me, because I did want to run it off my machine until I discovered that people can't connect on this network to each other, so I figured, why the heck not? So I set up my account and got my free credits or whatever from it. You can run Node locally, or certainly, yeah. So that's actually where Modulus comes in. It's my externally hosted platform. And that idea being that I need something sort of external to the system that I'm monitoring in this case. This could just as well be your same server. You can run Node side by side with WebSpeed and Apache. You just probably are going to use a different port than port 80. There are examples out there of using like reverse proxy, mod proxy, and Apache to sort of reverse proxy backend. So maybe you set up a directory that essentially just redirects to from port 80 to your node instance. But then you get into, there's a whole other set of issues with, well, does that mod proxy, does that actually block? Does it cause any issues with your socket connections? I'm just keeping everything, all connections going into Node, and be done with it. All right, organizing connection. So my example, I was just sort of organizing by rooms. The UID is nothing more than just identifying who should be listening to that broadcast. Node is lightweight, it's gonna serve all connections. There's all kinds of other plugins to make it listen. There's like direct Java plugins, and I'm sure somewhere there's like a direct SQL connection. I know that it connects to MongoDB. Obviously that's what Modulus touts as their primary database backend right now. Socket.io, using that to provide that real-time communication. Which is nice because it falls back. I've actually used other technology. For the longest time, I was trying to use Apache MQ, which was a Java messaging bus, and Stop Protocol. And I actually had it working because Apache MQ and its brethren Apollo, both those servers supported WebSockets, but they didn't give me all the fallback mechanisms, the heartbeats, the auto-reconnect that Socket does. And so Socket ended up being a much better solution that handles way more than I would have had to hand code. So which means you're not limited to just what we did here. You'll be able to try the code. I'm actually gonna kind of hold questions. I got about 6 minutes left. Here's a bonus demo. So if anybody wants to try this, if you've got a Android or iOS, some sort of smartphone that hopefully supports WebSockets. Does anybody actually want to try this one? They're all set. This is one I did the other night at the BLF Node talk. It mostly worked, but I just set everything up, so I had a few glitches. And it uses some
use some HTML5 audio. So if your mobile browser actually supports that, you'll hear some music. Basically, it'll go to a little blue screen that just says orchestra is warming up. Just that's fine. It's just going to sit and wait. Yes?
So what do you think is needed to provide persistency on the messages being sent?
You're gonna need something to maintain that state. If you want persistence, if a node instance goes down and you want to fail over to another, or when you bring it back up, if you want to resume those connections. Well, some things may happen automatically. Your clients may try to reconnect that socket if the node service goes down. But then there's another issue. If you have multiple node services and you connect this one on one hit and then connect to the other one on another hit, well, are they aware of all the sockets that have been connected? These are probably questions that I can't answer right now.
Okay.
Sorry.
By the way, if you shut down your node server, mm-hmm. you have a client with some kind of connection. The client reconnects with the node server.
Yeah, sometimes, depending on which library you're using, I know Socket.io, it does seem to reconnect if the node process drops. Yes, that's on the final slide, but yeah, it'll be available. All right, let's see if anybody is actually connecting for this. Hey, there we go. All right, we got 16 joining. Oh, I'm sorry.
You had mentioned that you need a web socket server.
I've not really seen, I'm sure somewhere you could find a free hosting service for Node, but most of them eventually want to be paid for their bandwidth and CPU usage. And
Modulus IO is fairly cheap.
Yeah, I mean, like right now, Modulus, I think, is telling me that based on just running this for a few hours there, I've accrued 26 cents worth of runtime on this instance and 36 on this one. And really, these have been running for like a half day yesterday and for a few hours this morning. They've actually been used. So I think it's a combination of memory and CPU and all that, how they do the billing.
And Amazon has, if you sign up, that you get a 1 year minimalistic thing that you can use.
Yes, you can host your own. You don't have to use. All right, let's see if this works. This will be real quick, because actually I've only got another minute or so. It's my poor man's wave. All right, so let's begin. Everyone connected, is your phones blinking? Are your phones blinking? Well, it's gonna pick one of you at random. Random number generator is not random. All right, and that's about where it broke down last time. I'm not sure why. It's like it went into it started repeating the original track, but
we need a new conductor.
Yeah, but basically the idea was
everyone who's connected, I can see in real time as each person enters or leaves the room, essentially. Each one of you is joining essentially an orchestra pit, and so I just pick one device or one connection at random, and I say, change the color on the screen. And this is happening like within just a few milliseconds. So that's just showing what can be done. You see right there, we spiked at about 10% CPU to do that little demo. And actually, that may have just been everyone joining. So very little usage out of that. But I mean, that was quick. And I've tried this on numerous devices, even set up web browsers with like 14, 15 tabs and watched each one of them blinking in time. That's how quickly with Socket.io you can push data out to multiple connections. And you can see why, if you can scale that, you can support increasingly large numbers of connections and end users. So, all right, let me throw up that last slide. And okay, so there's a URL to download the code. I'll just leave that up after the session until the next person comes in and leaves the room. Any questions now? No questions. Everyone thoroughly confused? Does that make sense?
Yes.
So how much how many fragments can you reuse by looking at the internet, finding a snippet, and just copy and pasting the
Excluding the ABL stuff, which was a whole other problem that due to my coding and misunderstanding of mem pointers, I had an extra null in my statements or in my data packets. Most of the fragments I was able to piece together from a Chaplin demo. So I downloaded the demo because I knew what I was looking for. I wanted some sort of notification system. I was like, well, chat's going to be the most basic example of back and forth communication. So I took that code, looked at it, figured out how it worked, and then figured out, okay, well, this, they actually illustrate how to do essentially chat rooms. And that's essentially what I was looking for. So once I figured out how that worked, then I started piecing it together myself. It's just, yeah, most of the examples that I saw, they kind of take for granted that you know something about Node. Like I said, the first thing that tripped me up was thinking that Node needed help, and it doesn't. It can support multiple different connection types. And as soon as I figured that out, a lot of things started making much more sense.
It seems to me that for this community, you know, adding Node, it's a big game changer. Is now there is all this code out there.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
even modulus, they're like, you don't have a project to host? Fine. Here, go to GitHub, download this demo application, and create your instance and upload that and try it out. So it's like they give you some code to try out and make sure that it works and probably hack that apart and figure out something useful. So, yes.
So
it's
the simplest case
of
just trying to wrap static HTML page.
Here's the key. You can serve up a plain HTML file like I did from the Node service. You can also serve up the same HTML file from another server. The key is when you include the socket.io.js file, that really should be loaded somehow from the server where you are hosting the Node service. But we can talk offline because I've gotten the, I'm done. All right.